On May 9th, 1865, a Confederate lieutenant general gathered his troops together to speak to them for the final time. They had had quite the 4 years. Over the course of the Civil War, between 650 and 750,000 men lost their lives. That is roughly equivalent to all the dead in every other American war combined. More than that, that made up about 2% of the population at that time. 2% of the population today would be about 6 million people. Think about how devastating that would be. It was an absolutely ugly time. But this young lieutenant general had done pretty well. He went from being a private in 1861 to becoming a lieutenant general by the end of the war in 1865. But more than that, he was well known by his enemies as well. William Tecumseh Sherman said that he was the most remarkable man the war produced on either side. He had no military training, and yet he was a tactical savant, an absolute genius. But on May 9th, 1865, in Gainesville, Alabama, his war came to an end. You see, a month earlier, General Lee had surrendered at Appomattox Courthouse. And so he'd gathered together the men he had fought and bled with for so many years. And this is what he said. "I do not think it proper or necessary at this time to refer to causes which have reduced us to this extremity, nor is now a matter of material consequence to us how such results were brought about. That we are beaten is a self-evident fact, and any further resistance on our part would justly be regarded as the very height of folly and rashness. The armies of Generals Lee and Johnston have surrendered. You are the last of all the troops of the Confederate States Army east of the Mississippi to lay down your arms. Civil war, such as you have just passed through, naturally engenders feelings of animosity, hatred, and revenge. It is our duty to divest ourselves of all such feelings. And as far as it is in our power to do so, to cultivate friendly feelings towards those with whom we have so long contended and heretofore so widely but honestly differed. Neighborhood feuds, personal animosities, and private differences should be blotted out. And when you return home, a manly, straightforward course of conduct will secure the respect of your enemies. Whatever your responsibilities may be to government, to society, or to individuals, meet them like men. I have never on the field of battle sent you where I was unwilling to go myself, nor would I now advise you to a course which I felt myself unwilling to pursue. You have been good soldiers. You can be good citizens. Obey the laws, preserve your honor, and the government to which you have surrendered can afford to be and will be magnanimous." Do you know that man's name? That man's name was Nathan Bedford Forrest. And in 2 years, he would be the first Grand Dragon of the Ku Klux Klan. Seems he had a hard time following his own advice. But he was not alone. You see, war is an ugly thing. And ugly things have a way of producing bitterness, and bitterness only makes an ugly thing even more ugly. The people of the South, they were reeling from the loss of life, from economic disaster. They could not stand the northern troops that were stationed in their towns. They hated the carpetbaggers, the people from the north that they thought came down to profit from their misery. That bitterness seethed and it grew. And it showed itself in groups like the KKK or like what today we call Jim Crow South. You see, war is an ugly thing. And ugly things have a way of producing bitterness, and bitterness only makes ugly things more ugly. The devil loves when he can do that. He loves when he can get us to seethe in bitterness because he knows it will control us, it will consume us, it will become the thing that divides us, it'll become the lens through which we view all of life. And in 2 Samuel chapter 9, David finds himself on the other side of a civil war. And this civil war, like all civil wars, was ugly. Brother killed brother. Countrymen killed countrymen. Thousands were dead. And in our series, we have followed David from the time he was a boy to the time he was a warrior to the time he was an outlaw running from Saul. And with all you know about his running from Saul, you would think that when Saul died, his life would get easier. But that's not how it went. Because Saul's forces refused to admit that David was the Lord's anointed. And so they anointed another king named Ish-bosheth in his place. And the civil war began. For years, it would rage on. And it was an ugly affair. There's a lot of bitterness. David's general Joab was bitter because his brother Asahel had been killed in battle by the general of Saul's forces named Abner. And when Abner came over to David's side because David was the Lord's anointed, Joab got his revenge. He called Abner to the side to have a conversation, and he murdered him in cold blood. David's wife, Michal, was bitter. If you remember, David married her before he had to run from Saul. And when he ran from Saul, God gave her in marriage to another man. But after Saul died, David went and he got his wife back. But she had started a life with someone else. If you remember the story, her husband follows behind, weeping along the way until he's sent home. Last week we saw the Ark of the Covenant comes in Jerusalem. David dances. How does Michal feel? She absolutely despised him. And the war finally comes to an end when Ish-bosheth is taking a nap. Some men break into his house. They kill him and they bring David his head. He did not want it to end like that. It was such an ugly affair. But finally, they got to the other side of it. And the warrior king conquers Jerusalem, sets up his palace there. He brings the Ark of the Covenant to Jerusalem, and then he makes plans to build a temple that his son would build. And the warrior king finally, after years of battle, sets down his sword, and he does what a lot of soldiers do. He thinks back. He thinks back to all the places he's been, all the close calls, all the men who had fought by his side that didn't live to see that day. People like Jonathan, his best friend. And when you're in that state of mind, there are one of two ways that you can react. You can seethe in bitterness, or you can move forward in God's kindness. Now, we live at a time and in a place where for many of us, the horrors of combat are foreign. I can't imagine what it would be like to spend my formative years on a battlefield. I can't imagine what it would be like to be my age now and to remember people who fought by my side, men and women who didn't live to see the day that I see today. But ugliness is everywhere in the world. And it is not restricted to a battlefield. And whether you've seen battle or not, you have seen that. You have seen how quickly things get ugly. How a relationship you spend years fostering and developing is ruined in one argument. How a careless action can destroy lives that you thought were impenetrable, unable to be destroyed. How someone else's careless action can leave your life in ashes. Sin is destructive, and it always works ugliness. But at some point, you find yourself like David. At some point, you get to the other side of it, don't you? At some point, the argument ceases, the war of words is over, the situation resolves itself, the dust has cleared. And when you think back to everywhere you've been and all you went through and all you suffered and all you struggled and all you lost, you can move forward in one of two ways. You can move forward in God's kindness, or you can seethe in bitterness. And if we give in to that bitterness, make no mistake, it will own you. It will govern your thoughts, your words, your actions. It will define all you do. It will become the lens through which you view all of life. It is all-consuming. In 2 Samuel chapter 9, David has plenty to be bitter about. But there's something else. If you remember back when we started this series, we said that David was a man after the Lord's own heart. And if you remember, we talked about why that is. And it wasn't because he had some kind of an indelible character in him. It wasn't because he was less sinful than you and I. The reason he was a man after the Lord's own heart is because God had come to his dead heart and worked the miracle of faith just as he has done for you. And that new heart beats to the rhythm of grace. And so David thinks back, and here's what he says. David asked, "Is there anyone still left of the house of Saul to whom I can show kindness for Jonathan's sake?" Now there was a servant of Saul's household named Ziba. They summoned him to appear before David, and the king said to him, "Are you Ziba?" "At your service," he replied. The king asked, "Is there no one still alive from the house of Saul to whom I can show God's kindness?" Ziba answered the king, "There is still a son of Jonathan. He's lame in both feet." "Where is he?" the king asked. Ziba answered, "He is at the house of Machir, son of Amiel, in Lodabar." The warrior king puts down his sword. He thinks back to everywhere he's been. And it's not bitterness that comes to mind. What is it? It's just gratefulness. Because who am I, David must have thought. Who am I that God would take a shepherd boy and make him king? Who am I that I would survive when so many others hadn't? Who am I that I'd be blessed in all the ways I've had? But way more than that, who am I that God should want me to be his child? Because David played a role in that ugliness, to say you and I play a role in the ugliness in our lives as well. And yet a God of complete and total love and grace and mercy forgave him nonetheless and made him a child of God. You see, war was ugly. And David had just been through a very ugly time. But isn't it funny how God does something beautiful against a backdrop of ugliness? Here's what happens. So King David had him brought from Lodabar, from the house of Machir, son of Amiel. When Mephibosheth, son of Jonathan, the son of Saul, came to David, he bowed down to pay him honor. David said, "Mephibosheth, at your service," he replied. "Don't be afraid," David said to him, "for I will surely show you kindness for the sake of your father Jonathan. I will restore you to all the land that belonged to your grandfather Saul, and you will always eat at my table." Mephibosheth bowed down and said, "What is your servant that you should notice a dead dog like me?" Then the king summoned Ziba, Saul's steward, and said to him, "I've given your master's grandson everything that belonged to Saul and his family. You and your sons and your servants are to farm the land for him and bring in the crops so that your master's grandson may be provided for. And Mephibosheth, grandson of your master, will always eat at my table." Now Ziba had 15 sons and 20 servants. Then Ziba said to the king, "Your servant will do whatever my lord the king commands his servant to do." So Mephibosheth ate at David's table like one of the king's sons. Mephibosheth had a young son named Micah, and all the members of Ziba's household were servants of Mephibosheth. And Mephibosheth lived in Jerusalem because he always ate at the king's table. He was lame in both feet. You see, David wasn't the only one who had just been through an ugly time. On the day that Saul died and the day Jonathan died, Mephibosheth not only lost his grandfather and his father, he lost an entire life. He lived in the ashes of that day. That day, everyone scrambled after Saul and Jonathan died. His nurse picked him up as a baby. She dropped him, and he'd be crippled for the rest of his life. He had to live in Lodabar, far away from the heartland of Israel, with a host who at some point he had to wonder if they were going to put together that he was worth more dead than alive. But then David showed him God's kindness. And Mephibosheth asked that question, "Who am I that David should notice me?" But he does. And suddenly a whole life that was taken away is given back. Lands that had been removed were once more under his ownership. Instead of living in fear, he now lives in security with a man who should have been his enemy and became his best friend. Not because of David's kindness, but first and foremost because of God's. You see, God's love is contagious. It longs to connect. In our second lesson, the Apostle Paul spoke about that. He said, remember that at that time you were separate from Christ, excluded from citizenship in Israel and foreigners to the covenants of the promise, without hope and without God in the world. But now in Christ Jesus, you who were once far away have been brought near by the blood of Christ. You see, along with Mephibosheth, we should all be asking that question. Who am I? Who am I that the God of heaven and earth, the God that stands outside of time and space, and yet holds all of time and space in the palm of his hand, who am I that he should notice me, that he should care about me, that he should live, die, and rise for me, that he should listen to my prayers, that he should care about me at all? And yet he does. See, that's what makes God's love unique. It is truly unearned. It is truly unconditional. It is love for love's sake. We call that grace. And it's that love that connects us to our God, but it is not content only to connect us to him. It also connects us to each other. That love that God shows for us spills over so that we live in love towards others the way God lives in love towards us. And one of the greatest opportunities you have to do that is towards the people towards whom you have the most reason to be bitter. Because what's more undeserved, what's more unconditional, what's more unearned than that? That truly is God's kindness, isn't it? In Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, in 1913, veterans from the Battle of Gettysburg got together for a reunion. Veterans from the North and the South met at the places where they had fought as young men. And now men in their 70s and 80s, who at one point had been trying to kill each other, had a chance to sit side by side on the fortifications they had occupied so many years ago and remember. And the highlight of the whole thing was a reenactment of Pickett's Charge. You remember learning about this in history? Pickett's Charge was a charge where the Confederate soldiers lined up in a field, they marched towards the Union fortifications, and nearly the entire division was wiped out. With this day, the Southerners gathered together in the field. They let out the rebel yell. They began to advance. And witnesses say there was an audible groan from the Union lines because they could remember that day. They remembered what happened. But this time, not a shot was fired. This time, the Union troops left their fortifications and met them in the middle, not in battle, but as friends. Gettysburg was an ugly thing. But there's something beautiful about that, isn't there? You see, we live in an ugly world. And we have seen the way it can just get out of control so quickly. We've seen relationships ruined. We've seen lives shattered. We've seen so much loss, so much hurt feelings, so much opportunity to be bitter. But God has done for you the same thing he did for David. He worked a new heart in you through the power of his word and baptism. He has led you to see God's kindness towards you. That if God of heaven and earth should bind himself to you in promises, that he would send his son to live, die, and rise so all your offenses could be removed and you could be called his child. And that love, it changes you. It leads us to show God's kindness to others. And do you know where that happens? For the most part, it doesn't happen in grand shows like you saw in Gettysburg in 1913. It just happens in your everyday life. In the way you forgive, in the way you love, in the way you serve, and in the way you show people God's kindness. Amen.
Thanks for listening to Emmanuel's Sermon Podcast. If you'd like to learn more about Emmanuel, you can follow us on Facebook or visit us at imluth.org. That's immluth.org. Have a great day.